Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
The following radio show is a live recording of the I Survived Real Estate event on August 23rd, 2008. The event brought together realtors, auctioneers, investors, mortgage professionals, economists, data providers, and builders to discuss how we got here, how the respective industries are changing, and how we move forward and prosper together in 2008 and beyond. Proceeds from the event went to the Orange County affiliate of the Susan G. Komen for the Cure. The event would not have been possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: the San Diego Creative Investment Association and President Bill Tan, the Investors Workshops of Orange County and President Sean Watkins, MVT Productions, the audio-video master behind the spectacular live production, White House Catering, who provided superb cuisine and outstanding service for the live event, Fry Wiles, the web development, internet marketing, and creative design firm that created the event site iSurvive2008.com, Proxibid, the online auction platform that aired the entire event online nationwide live, the Nixon Library, Pechanga Resort and Casino, the Chicago Bulls, the Denver Nuggets, and the Cleveland Cavaliers. See iSurvive2008.com for pictures, video, and more details on this historic event, brought to you by the Norris Group.
I talked to a guy who handled the REO assets for a credit union at the California Mortgage Brokers Association conference a couple weeks ago, and he wondered if we could get him a list of who held the firsts on his loans. That was my initial response. Now, he was on about his fourth martini, chewing on the olives, and so I probed this a little bit. I said, well, with all due respect, it would seem to me that that information would be in your customer files. You took an application, you'd want to know who had the first on the loan, what the loan amount was, and, you know, logical things like that. And he said, no, we don't have that in any of the files. That's why I'm looking to buy the information from you. And I said, it didn't occur to you to find out anything about the first mortgage? He said, no, we did almost no research on the original one. This is right out of his mouth. We did no research on the first mortgage or on the home buyer. We just got an assessment on what the house was worth, and if it was worth a certain amount of money, we wrote the loan. And I wished I had a video camera at that moment, but I don't. And the only reason I'm telling you this long-winded story is that I think you said something very interesting when you started this particular round of questioning, which really gets to the point that this particular foreclosure cycle may never happen again, only because it's a very different foreclosure cycle than anything we've gone through. Every preceding cycle, at least what the historians tell me, because I'm not nearly as old as everybody else up here, what the historians tell me is that every preceding cycle was preceded by an economic downturn. We look at Realty Track, we believe this thing kicked into gear about the first quarter of 06, where it really started to pick up traction. At that point in time, the unemployment rate was at historically low levels. Interest rates were at historically low levels. And Chris would know this better than me, but the economy was growing at, I don't know, 3, 4%, something like that. There was nothing that would indicate that we were about to see the biggest meltdown in housing. Well, except for you. And for those of you who read The California Crash, you knew this was coming. But what we saw was, and I know everybody would like the market to handle this itself, but we saw capitalism at its worst. We saw individuals who decided they were going to get rich buying a house, or that they just needed a McMansion instead of that 3-bedroom, 2-bath condo or chalet. We saw, no offense to Joel, but we saw realtors kind of saying, well, if I can sell a $500,000 house, why should I sell a $250,000? Same amount of work, and people are going to get qualified for it, so it's not my problem. Mortgage brokers certainly didn't represent the interests of the buyers. The lenders were ignoring their own underwriting standards. Wall Street was funneling money into this ridiculousness hand over fist, and tools were being used that were never intended to be used the way they were. There is no reason at all that anybody can ever convince me why an average home buyer should have a negative amortization loan on their principal residence. That's like handing a 5-year-old a bazooka and saying, don't hurt yourself. So you know, I mean, for 100 and some odd years, this bizarre system where the buyer really had no representation, nobody had fiduciary responsibility for the buyer's interests, has worked 99% of the time. And it's worked largely because we had good professionals like realtors who protected people's interests. But the wheels all came off at once.
I think part of it is, you know, there's a lot of new people in business from 1997 all the way to 05, 06. You had the greatest bull run, and it kept on defying logic, and it kept on going. And the more it goes, the more you get people to join, and the more they rationalize that it'll continue. And it's not, you don't just skew buying decisions by what the cost is monthly. You also say, okay, well, the only place I can afford is Victorville. So what that it's a 75-mile drive to Orange County? That's okay, too, because I'm going to make $100,000 on my house. And that all unravels at the same time. And now you have migration changes because they realize that doesn't work anymore.
The gas only costs $2 a gallon.
Well, a lot of people know that I've made a bet with somebody in front of an audience that when oil was 142, I bet that it would be 50 before it was 150. So I've gotten a reprieve, if nothing else. Richard, you've been quiet. A lot of investors have gone to other states because they apparently have wood and bricks for free there, because houses, they're building houses, let's say, in Texas, and you can buy them, and they're $110,000, and they're brick. And you come here, and I don't think you can get a building lot probably out of the ground for less than about 80. How does the building industry look at this and say, other than completely stealing a finished building lot, it looks to me there's going to be a little while before we build quantities of homes?
Oh, absolutely. I'm quiet because I'm just waiting for you guys to figure this all out so we can start building again. But that's really the problem. I mean, we have to get through the crisis. And I keep thinking of it, and our industry keeps thinking of it as two crises in one. We had a housing crisis, so the industry, from our perspective, was looking at a soft landing. We knew production was going to slow down. Kept saying next year, and then that year ended up being better than the last year. And we finally got to 2006, and everyone was convinced it is going to start to slow down. And it did start to slow down, and then it really started to slow down. And then we got to 2007, and the bottom dropped out. And so we had our underlying core problems that created that housing crisis that none of us are even talking about tonight, and we're focused on a credit crisis that then got laid on top of that, you know, March of last year, especially August of last year. And I don't think any of us like the solutions that we're seeing, because probably most of the people in this room are free market folks. They believe in individual responsibility. But the reality is, because that run-up was so long, and because the numbers are so bad, and because we built all of our financial institutions on the concept that the American homeowner was an undeniable winner, it was the safest investment in the world, unfortunately, I think the responses we're seeing are necessary, because letting the market correct might just be so painful that none of us would be here when it's all over. So for our industry, it's really tough. We're sitting watching, where does it all land? And we're still focused on the core problems that created the housing crisis to begin with, which are the way we drive so many costs, and I touched on them earlier. The California home is a very expensive animal, and it's going to remain an expensive animal. We haven't done anything to change the underlying costs of producing a home in this state. We haven't done anything to add certainty to the process of creating a home in this state. If anything, unfortunately, our friends in government actually seem to be unaware of the problem that's going on in the housing market and are layering on more and more and more at a faster pace and at a greater pace the restraints upon the production of new housing. So right now it's not an issue, and we're going to fool ourselves as the market corrects. Absolutely, affordability will come back. And we're going to fool ourselves that we've solved the core housing crisis of affordability. And when production is needed again, those problems are going to come rushing back. And that's when we're going to be faced with then trying to solve those problems. And I do, my opinion and our industry's opinion, there's an underlying affordability problem that's being masked right now, at least in this state.
There's an affordability problem as in it's too expensive?
Cost of production.
Cost of production.
I see. Okay. With
now, do you think that the building that, when it does resume, will probably build a more reasonable-sized home? Because I think the reason why they built the big ones is because the lot costs so much. I mean, that was an understandable thing. We can build a 4,000 square foot house and someone will buy it, or a 2,000 on the same lot. And if they're going to buy a 4,000 square foot, and you know, we can make a lot more money on that extra 2,000 square foot of construction, that would be a reasonable decision. But now we got a few too many of those.
Well, and let's layer in reality here. I mean, I think we're all under the impression that we were building nothing but 4,500 square foot homes. Reality is the average square footage in the state only moved in the last 10 years from about 2,200 square feet to about 2,500 square feet. So they were bigger, but they weren't
giant.
They weren't all massive.
Okay.
And what gets built goes back to, you know, that residual land value calculation and the market, what the market will bear, what the demand is, where the particular land is that you're looking at. So there's a lot of factors. Do we want to build affordable? The industry wants to build affordable product like never before right now, because that's the only product that can move in this market.
But when you have a lender-owned property going for half of your cost, that's a bit of a problem. I just want to say one thing before I forget about it. I think this is an unusual event. I don't think I'll ever get to see this much of a mess happen inside of such a tight time frame. But I think what it's also going to do, we're going to skew prices so low, artificially low, that I think we're going to create massive migration that could have never shown up here. If you're in Texas, for instance, you have a 3.5% tax bill on a 150 grand house. When you retire, you don't get the state tax benefit of not paying state income tax. So when you retire, you're just stuck with a big tax bill you might not want. You come out here, you can literally go across to Sacramento, Moreno Valley, Hemet, lots of places, and go straight across and have a cheaper overhead and a climate that's much better. I actually think we're going to skew migration to California in huge numbers after 2011. And what's going to be interesting is the only place for the price impact to go will be to existing inventory, because there wouldn't have been a bunch of building. And you guys won't be creating lots because they don't pencil. So there'll be a gap, and that'll create the necessary price movement to where you finally will pencil and you'll be back in business. Yes, sir.
I'm sure this isn't popular because I'm in the state of California, but whoever put up the map where you had the orange blocks, who had that?
Orange?
You remember the orange blocks and you know, like Phoenix and Las Vegas and California? Well, you realize that during this entire period of time that we're all talking about, you could have gone to Carolina and Georgia and Oklahoma and Texas and on and on and on.
We
did. And bought that same house at that time for years and years and years for half of what you could of all those markets that are now orange. What you have, those markets that are orange, were so tremendously overheated by a variety of different things, they had to come back to normal. And normal still is the entire United States of America, in my opinion. And so when you get way out of balance, any place, way out of balance, you will have to seek normal again. And, of course, when we travel around selling homes, we happen to find what normal is. Yes, Bruce?
You know, what's interesting is if you had auctioned off a house in 2005...
Yes.
You would have found normal probably 20% more than the builders thought they would get, because there was so much velocity to the emotion of buying that product. So you're right. The auction proves the truth. Now, I wanted to get back to what you were saying. I love California because it's got velocity both up and down. I've invested in Texas. It hasn't been really exciting.
Boy,
it hasn't moved a bit. I know the California is volatile, but what happens is we get to go up again because people want to be here more than they want to be in Oklahoma. I like the fact that it's volatile. I can count on the fact we're going to get unreasonable again, and I'm going to profit by it and get out close to the peak, I hope,
well,
and enjoy it over and over again.
Well, the bottom line is, though, you do have to accept it when you're on the roller coaster going down.
You betcha.
That's the only thing
you
that I was making, point
to,
I was making.
And to know that it's coming in advance is a big help. Let's talk.
By the way, though, come to Oklahoma. It's a fabulous place.
But does it go up much? No.
It's okay.
Fannie and Freddie, are we going to have them in existence under their current private ownership for the remainder of this year? Who wants to chime in on that?
I think someone said before you were talking about a bunch of rules done on a knee-jerk basis, I think is what was the exact word. And what I actually had a question going through my mind. Has there ever been a law or policy passed that wasn't a knee-jerk reaction?
Not that I'm aware of.
So, and this goes back to the answer to your question. Who knows? Who knows what they're going to do with Fannie and Freddie? They're clearly insolvent. They clearly will not exist in their current form, but what are they going to do about it? I don't know. I mean, it could be as simple as them simply giving them cash. They get a big preferred equity stake, and they continue to exist at the taxpayer expense. It could be something as draconian as completely taking them over, nationalizing them, giving them to the Fed, break them up in pieces, and sell them off into private companies. Who knows?
Okay, go ahead.
I've read, and there was one piece of legislation. It was the Anti-Knee-Jerk Legislation Act of 1942. It took them 7 years to pass the bill. I'm not picking on economists here, but I have read two perfectly thoughtful, logical, well-thought dissertations in the last 3 days. One suggested that the absolutely correct answer was to privatize them entirely, get the government out. The other suggested that the perfect solution was to have the government take them over completely. And I came away reading both of them thinking, boy, that's the right answer. And I think, you know, I got into a heated debate with somebody on a Fox broadcast who said that Fannie and Freddie were at the heart of the foreclosure problem, which is one of the stupider things I've heard, and because they didn't buy most of these loans.
They would have been. If they could have been, they would have been.
They would have. I mean, if they could have, they would. The management was bad enough that I agree with you. So I think you're going to see something left because you don't just make $5 trillion go away.
No, I hope not.
But, you know, well, we're doing our darn our best.
I'm doing my best by buying as low as I can, but I'm sorry.
I think if anybody has that the secret formula for what's left at the end of this for Fannie and Freddie, I haven't seen it yet.
You know, I guess one of why I asked the question is, okay, let's whatever scenario plays out involves writing big checks. Is that ultimately going to be inflationary, and are we going to be looking at interest rates that are much different 2 or 3 years from now? What do you think?
Well, there's two ways of paying the bills. One way is to print the money and pay the bills, and the other one is to issue debt. Our government still has the functional confidence of the world investor community, and as long as they continue to have that confidence, they can do all the debt they want, and it won't have inflationary pressures. It's if you start to see, you know, the bottom drop out of the public bond market and treasuries start to go crazy, well, yeah, then they have to turn the printing press on. But I think the U.S. is really far from that at this point in time.
So. Okay.
That was almost bullish.
Almost.
Interest rates, then? You don't expect to see interest rates do anything?
I think interest rates are doing exactly what we expected them to do. They're finally starting to reflect the risk that's out there. I mean, you're starting to see the spreads widen because, guess what? The financial markets are a mess, gee.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be a trend that's going to continue for a while as a result of the risk that's in the market. And eventually, as this passes, they'll start to come back down again to that, no, like I said before, that new long-run low level that we sort of have to appreciate. I mean, we just have to live in – we have to understand we live in a world of diminished returns. And that's just – that's the kind of world we're moving into right now. So,
you know, when I first got into the business and refied my house at 17 and a half – and I got to refi it again at 12, and I thought it was a really good deal. And there was a lot of people that were very smart telling me that you're never going to see anything that's single digit again. And now we've been really spoiled by seeing 5% interest rates, and now we're at 6.5, and everybody thinks that's really a bad thing. I think, you know, it's interesting, in the study of all of this, interest rates can be very high, be double digit, and you could still have a real estate boom as long as the monthly number still makes sense in relationship to what people make. So the price skewing down low enough would make room for an interest rate hike, and it would still have a healthy real estate market if that had to happen.
You gave us a lecture over at Realty Track one day, which I now quote liberally. But you were talking about, you know, V-shaped markets and U-shaped markets. And one of the things you talked about that really stuck with me was the inflection point, which is that in most of these cycles, you hit an inflection point where the prices drop far enough and the interest rates are favorable enough and the affordability index is right and people come off the sidelines. And And when you start talking about a 65% price drop and a 6.5% interest rate, you'd figure you'd see more buyers coming to the market than what you're currently seeing. And I can't help but think that a lot of this is market psychology.
Oh, absolutely.
That the lenders are afraid to lend because they don't know how far down is, and the buyers are waiting for a bottom that they can't see with a telescope. And I do believe that in addition to the, and I think you were the one that brought this up, Chris, in addition to the fact that $300 billion FHA program is really aimed more at keeping the bank solvent than it is about keeping people in their homes, I think it's trying to jolt confidence back into the marketplace and say it's okay to get back in the water because we took all the really bad sharks out.
You know, one of the things that's happened this time is the velocity of the change in price has been unprecedented in anything I've ever studied. So this price change of 35 to 50% has got to shock people. As a matter of fact, they apparently aren't even unaware of it. That was what was interesting. There was you saw that survey?
Yeah, it was a Zillow study that showed that I think it was 7 out of 10 people thought their particular home was still appreciating.
What's that word you have?
The word I use is home hallucination.
Home hallucination.
The ability to convince oneself that while the price of everybody else's home has fallen, your neighborhood is clearly different.
I'm sure every time Tommy auctions a house, he's got one of those.
I must tell you, the ad on the Tulsa television today says exactly that. It says all the other markets are bad, but guess what? In Tulsa, they're going up. And that is what the ad says.
Well, it's nice if we feel that way because then we buy some more. So that's part of it. Phil, we've talked a few times, and are lenders now skewing to so conservative that they're not making loans that are so safe it's ridiculous at this point? Are they not making those loans?
Yeah. I mean, you can hear it. I think part of the magnification of the problem has been, you know, the automated underwriting, as you mentioned. You know, the automated underwriting was such a blessing because it was just one of those things that if someone had a certain credit score, certain ratio, certain income, boom, automatic approval goes straight to, and Fannie and Freddie would buy it. Now they've just you know, turned off the spigot, the water spigot. So now the credit score is both, so it's, instead of being this, it needs to be this, ratios need to be this, and it's just dried it up. I can't tell you how often what I'm seeing right now, people putting 50% down. I have a client buying a $2 million property, putting 50% down. He's been in the commercial broker for the past, you know, X number of years.
I feel awful for that guy. You know.
And he can't get financing because his credit score is too low. And it's just a point of needing to get his credit score up until he'll be fine. But, I mean, literally 50% down. I have another client right now I'm dealing with.
I know a hard money lender that would go for that.
But I mean, that's the thing. I mean, we are seeing hard money lenders literally. I mean, they're picking up the slack.
Oh my goodness!
Huge, huge resource.
Okay, so that's part of the emotional cycle that goes on not just with a buyer who's afraid, but it's everywhere. Everyone's afraid.
Whoa! Those automated systems were a disaster. I mean, every mortgage broker immediately figured out how to game those things. And the reason they're getting turned off is that was one of the problems.
Oh, I totally agree. But my point is the greatest blessing, to get the liquidity in the market, which obviously took us to where we're at. But that's why it's so magnified. It's so magnified and it's so quick, down 50% or whatever it is.
But again, the price mechanism is fixing this. Everybody's going to qualify. It's just a function of prices falling far enough.
Well, you know, okay, once again, high affordability. Okay, we're going to touch on the holy grail here. I'm sorry. I can't resist, though. Okay. And you know what? I am open to learn, and this would be the panel that would set me straight. If high affordability solved something, you had the same affordability, 40%, in 1993, 94, 95, 96, and you went down in price every one of those years. We didn't go up in price until 97 when we had 40% affordability, but we had the other kicker. We had migration gains. To me, that's the kicker. If I'm going to predict when something's coming back, I look at the domino of migration coming back. That is a true indicator of the decline of foreclosures and of inventory.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.